All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Free For All. I'm your host, Big John. Thank you for joining us again tonight. Before we get the festivities started, let me just remind everyone out there to go to, if you're watching us on YouTube, Rumble, X, or Facebook Live, just go ahead and make sure you smash like for the show and also subscribe to Grumblings Media, at Grumblings Media on all the platforms, all one word. So check us out. Make sure you're a fan. Okay, enough whoring out the show for everybody. Let's get started with tonight's show. We have two very special guests. Let me introduce them to you right now. Our first guest is the current chair of the San Diego Libertarian Party. He assumed the mantle of leadership recently, and we're happy to have him on the show. Everyone say hello to Derek Fabian. Derek, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Yeah, we're looking forward to chopping it up with you. And our other guest on the show tonight, he is the editor of the Escondido Times Advocate. Everyone, welcome, please, David Ross to the show. David, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're ready to go. We're ready to go. It's politics season. It's presidential politics. That's what everyone's focused on. Regardless of political stripe, or even those who are party agnostic, having keeping an eye on what's going on. So let's start. Let's kick this off by talking about Kamala Harris. Of interest to you guys out in California. Let's bring up a picture of Mrs. Harris there. Now she has not officially been named the nominee. For the Democratic Party. She's the presumptive nominee. She's been endorsed by Joe Biden, who dropped out of the running after winning enough delegates at the primaries through his resignation. She is now the presumptive nominee. Of course, we'll have to wait until the Democratic National Convention and the delegates actually cast their votes for her on the floor. But gentlemen, let's start this off by asking, like, Kamala Harris, how do we feel about her stepping in for Joe Biden at this point? Of course, you hear the Republicans really complaining about this, saying that, hey, you know, you say we're the existential threat to democracy, and yet here you are, where an old dude who people have been questioning his mental capacity for a long time now, he's in long enough to win the primaries, but then all of a sudden he drops out, and we're kind of anointing the vice president as the nominee. David, what do you think about this? Do you think this was planned by the Democrats, or was it just untenable for them to keep insisting that Biden run? How do you think this came about?
Well, I don't think they planned it this way. I think they literally believed that Biden would be able to make it happen. But then they saw him, how terribly he performed in that debate with Trump, and they suddenly realized that they weren't able to pull it off. I mean, I think that the people at the top knew how bad he was, and they were just kind of hiding it from the rest of us. I don't really look on this as being a coup. The way the Democratic Party delegate rules are is that the delegates are not bound to vote for somebody on the first ballot like they are in the Republican Party. And so, you know, they know from talking to the delegates that the delegates are supporting Kamala, and I don't really know how they could support anybody else, as much as I don't like her. Nobody else stepped forward to declare their candidacy, so they were kind of stuck with her.
Right. And Derek, you know, what's interesting here is, to me, that, you know, you've heard a lot of people, like, if you watched what happened at the Libertarian National Convention with seven rounds of voting on the floor, basically coming down to hand-to-hand combat among the libertarians before they eventually settled on Chase Oliver to be their nominee. And at the time, a lot of people would come up to me as a libertarian and they'd say to me, like, why don't you guys just go to the primary system? What's the point of going around state to state voting in primaries if it's non-binding? And so, what do you think about this? Like, literally, I believe Biden dropped out like a day or two before those delegates were actually going to be bound to him and by some bylaws in the, you know, in the Democratic Party bylaws. So what do you think? Should we all move to convention nominations, or is the primary thing a bust? How do you view that?
Well, because I'm relatively new, I don't know enough about, like, this was my first national convention. So I watched every second of the whole thing. It was a long, long amount of time, but I really wanted to learn more about it. So I would have to look more into what the difference is. And I definitely don't know anything about other party systems. But I would say that even if this would have happened after that time, I think that the Democrats would have probably had an ad hoc meeting and changed the rules or something. Even if it's in the bylaws, we all know if you get the people together and you can change whatever you want. So I think it was an untenable situation. I think that was the right descriptor.
Yeah. And I mean, it did seem like, look, we all kind of knew what was happening with Biden, but let me ask you this, because let me show you something that I have, and it's the latest from 538 as of this afternoon. If you look at that sort of like red bluish purple line hovering somewhere around 43-44%, the reason it looks purplish is because Harris and Trump are basically in a statistical tie right now when it comes to polling. And that wasn't the case, say, a month ago when Biden and Trump were in the race. Trump clearly had the edge. And 538 is one of those that I think is more of the trustworthy polls. You know, I know Nate Silver, he really is a nerd when it comes to statistics. He doesn't have the necessary bias in there, in my opinion. But David, do you think this is more indicative of Harris's popularity, or is it more indicative of, wow, we really can't stand Trump if you're not part of MAGA?
Well, the Democrats had a pretty decent argument that, or I mean, the Republicans had a pretty decent argument that Biden was too old to be president. And now the Republicans now the Democrats have that argument, because Trump will actually be older than Biden is now when he gets to the end of his term. And, you know, as feisty as Trump is, I don't see him getting, he doesn't seem to me that he's any more mentally sharp than he was 4 years ago when he was running against Biden. And so it's, you know, the Democrats have found that it's actually that they can turn the tables and say, hey, we don't want the old guy. And that might actually have something to do with it. And also there is a large number of people, a large percentage of people, among who I count myself, who would not vote for Trump if he was the last person on earth.
Okay. But it is interesting, because I think now with Biden dropping out, if Trump makes it to Election Day, he will be the oldest man to run for president. So that argument, like you said, has quickly flipped. It's no longer, to your point, a plus for the Republicans. Now, granted, I don't think Trump's cognitive state is anywhere near as bad as what Biden's obviously was. But Derek, do you view this again? Do you see that people are excited about, you guys are out in California? Harris is a former attorney general out there, senator out there. Like, do you think there's excitement in the base for Harris? Or again, is it more like, hey, anybody but Trump type of deal?
I think that essentially, I mean, there's a large portion of people, you know, like David was saying, that there's no persuasion that is going to ever get them to vote for Trump. And so that number, I don't know whether it's 30% of the 43.6, or I don't know that number, but it's a pretty strong number that's not going anywhere. Right. And I think a lot of the people that were in the middle, that if they followed politics at all, it was just so apparent how degraded Joe Biden's mental acuity was, that they just felt like, listen, I can't go with this guy. Like, he's got control of the nuclear codes, and I don't know if he knows what room he's in. And so now that there's a different option, which I don't think they should have ever ran, I mean, Biden in the first place. Like, I thought that was really stupid. But hey, I don't know what goes on behind those doors. And he seems like a
Biden did win the primaries in 2020. Now, I'm becoming persuaded that the primary system is really a bad thing for parties, and I think it be. I'd like us to take a look at, like, say, what the conservatives in Britain, in the UK do, where there's like about 100,000 people there who vote on which guy is going to be the head of the party. And some people will say, well, it's undemocratic. I also think it's undemocratic for people who are not Republicans and people who are not Democrats to be able to take over the party, as Bernie Sanders almost did with the Democrats. So he's been a lifelong socialist, and yet he came close to taking the Democratic Party. And Donald Trump wasn't a Republican until a few months before he decided to run in 2016. And I think parties should be able to define who they are and what people they allow to be their standard bearers.
Well, and I also think that one thing that I really didn't like about what I witnessed, and again, I'm relatively new to caring about any of these things, but when Kennedy kind of got into it at first, I'm like, wow, this guy seems interesting. Like, I want to hear what he's got to say. And then kind of what was going on in the Democratic Party, where they were making it basically so he had no chance by changing the rules in different states. There was one state where anyone that went to the state, all of their delegates automatically would go to Biden. Like, so it doesn't seem like that's like a very good system. So,
most states do have all or nothing in terms of their primary. Some are, do it proportionally. I think I think Montana is one of them.
Republicans do it. Republicans do it more than Democrats do. It's only like with the Democrats. I think New Hampshire is a winner take all, and I think the first two in the states are that way, and then Biden started picking it up when he when it was proportional delegations.
Yeah. And by the way, before we continue, just want to remind all of our viewers, if you have a question for either Derek, David, or myself, or if you have some comments you want to make about Kamala Harris or Donald Trump or any of the other candidates, please feel free to jump into the comment sections. We will see your questions live, and I'll pop them up on the screen. We'll read them, and we'll have our guests take a shot at them. So feel free to do that if you're so moved. Okay, but here's the thing, right? So now let me ask you this. So obviously Kamala Harris has had the advantage of not being the target of Republican attack ads, because they've been focused on Biden up until now. So in a lot of ways, I think it's been an advantage for her, or it's been an advantage for the Democrats, that Biden didn't drop out earlier, right? So that you know, like if you were of the mind that this was planned, it's worked out for the Democrats in the sense that here's Harris. Okay, now you got to all the Republican strategy has to change. They have to take their sights away from Biden and train them on Harris, right? And we've seen that Harris, like we showed the polls earlier, dead heat, statistical dead heat with Trump. Now, the last couple of days, we've seen Trump himself. Part of the strategy here is to tag, apparently, Kamala Harris as being woke and heavily invested in DEI. Now, of course, that's going to be attached to the Democratic Party in general. But what do we think of this strategy? I saw Trump tweet today, as a matter of fact, or on his Truth Social platform, Kamala Harris is Indian. Is she black? Is she Indian? Can she make up her mind? And of course, we all know Kamala Harris is biracial. Her father was African-American. Her mother was from India. So, David,
African-American. She's Jamaican.
Jamaican, black, colloquially speaking, right? So
yeah.
Do you feel this is an effective strategy, or is it only preaching to the converted if you're a MAGA Republican or a conservative Republican who's been railing about wokeness, anti-wokeness, and anti-DEI and all that stuff? Do you feel this is an effective strategy to come out guns blazing and saying like, hey, Kamala Harris says she's black one day if the audience is black. She says she's Indian if it's an immigrant audience. Like, do you think this is an effective strategy or is that going to backfire?
I think it's going to backfire in that it the only people that kind of insult strategy works with is people that are already deciding they're going to vote for Trump and think that it's cool that he employs those kinds of insults. I've been in California all my life. Kamala Harris has been she's been in California politics for 20 years, and I've never heard that she was anything other than black. I don't think she's ever said, oh, well, I'm Indian for a while and then switched over to say she's black. I think, you know, it's always been well understood that she was biracial. And, you know, that's just Trump trying to, you know, he's always trying to stick people with little needles that he thinks are humorous and his followers thinks are humorous and nobody else thinks is humorous. And I think probably tends to turn off the few people that are not committed to either party.
You know, Derek, a couple of weeks ago, we had Larry Sharp on the show, a big name in libertarian circles, and he also ran for governor of New York as a libertarian candidate. And he said, like, this was before Biden had officially dropped out, I think. And he said, oh, man, the Democrats would make a horrible choice if they picked Harris. Goes, nobody likes Kamala Harris. Nobody. Larry Sharp said, I'm black. I hate Kamala Harris. All the black people I know hate Kamala Harris. She's a horrible person. All her policies are horrible, and her history in California, horrible. So why do you think that, like, the Republicans don't start pounding her on policy? Why this immediate turn to racial politics and to this woke pandering and this DEI pandering? Is it really that strong a message? David seems to think, like, hey, this is only preaching to the converted. What do you think?
Well, I actually heard something earlier. If you guys are familiar with the news, independent news show Breaking Points, and I was watching that earlier, and one of the hosts is Indian, and he was saying that, like, in the Indian community, that's actually long been a big critique of her, because she changed, apparently, at one point. I can't remember the exact details, but she did switch it at one point. Publicly, but this was a long time ago.
You mean whether or not she was Indian, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. She used to claim it. This guy, like I said, he's totally like religious Indian, like the whole way. And he was saying, like, that basically she was raised the same way that he was, based on his understanding of her background. And so I think that's where the critique comes from. What I think it is, and this is just my guess, is they, you know, they weren't ready for this, and they had to just swing the bat at something while they scramble to figure out their next move. I don't think it's effective. I don't think it's going to work. And I just think they had to say something. I agree. It would be great to, you know, I mean, critique either of them on their policies that, but she's basically been in hiding. Like, she hasn't said anything. And I think that's part of their plan is to, she'll get crushed on it. You know, cause I also find it, I've also found her way more eloquent recently, which is weird. She always just, and obviously people maybe just were clipping the most ridiculous statements. And I'm sure there's always a factor of that with anybody. But she sounds more put together lately, so that's been helping her. But she hasn't been saying anything substantive, like, on any of the big topics. So it's hard to take a shot because she hasn't said that much.
Well, they've been definitely keeping a lid on her. I mean, she'll make a statement, but she takes no questions. And then, you know, she's in, she's out. Now, that might be a good enough strategy because as we're finding out, outside of current Trump supporters, if you give Trump enough microphones, it's the proverbial give him enough rope and he'll hang himself. The question is it going to be enough to rally the independents and the few people who haven't made up their minds yet will Trump's, like, he can't help himself, right, David? We know that. He's got to make his remarks. He's got to make his what he thinks is funny that nobody else thinks is funny outside of his base. Like, is this a smart strategy? Like, tell Kamala to keep her mouth shut. Don't take any questions. Don't say anything stupid until the election, because really, let Trump talk himself into a hole.
Well, I thought when he watched his acceptance speech at the convention, and I thought the first 35 minutes of it, I was thinking, you know, this is a pretty good speech. You know, he could win a lot of undecided voters this way. And then something clipped or something slipped, and he fell into one of his typical things where he was speaking a couple of days ago, and he was saying what great speech writers he has, and he admitted that, well, and I usually don't pay attention to what they've written, and I'm sure his, you know, the converted finds that just delightful. But when I listen to a Trump speech, I want to fall asleep. I mean, I don't think it's funny, and I don't think even though I'm probably more in line with his political policies than I am with Harris. In fact, I know I am. He is right when he says that she is the most liberal senator in the United States Senate, and that, you know, that's fact. And now she's starting to retrench on a lot of those policies, like she's suddenly for fracking and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing also is you brought up the Republican National Convention in Trump's speech, but was I the only one when Hulk Hogan came up and did his whole, like, I'm a Trump-a-maniac now and all that? I don't know. I just had visions of Idiocracy going through my head, if you ever saw that movie, which was a dystopian future where the president...
Yeah, I agree with you. It reminded me of Idiocracy, and I'm sorry, I'm just not a wrestling fan. And,
you know. Oh, I'm a big wrestling fan, so... Coming from a wrestling fan, even I thought it was a little bit over the top, even among Trump. Now, the two of them go back, I think. Trump and Hogan, you know, Trump promoted Hogan and vice versa when he owned the casino, and they had WrestleMania in one of his casinos at the, I forget which one it was, in Jersey, Atlantic City. But I still thought that was a little bit like, oh, my God, I'm watching Idiocracy, because that's how President, what was his name, Alvarez or whatever the character's name was. You know, that was part of how he got elected, and he showed up in Congress with two AR-15s, shooting them off, you know, to get his agenda passed and everything. Literally, we're half a step away from that now. But all right, so that's good. Okay, so now, in addition to, we had the it was tumultuous, right? We had the assassination attempt of Trump, which gave him a bump in the polls, also made him more human, and look. I'm an admitted, I've got TDS. I don't like Trump at all from the days when he was here in New York. Never liked him a bit. But that photo of him afterwards, like, that'll feed any conspiracy theory that the whole thing was staged, where he came off and, you know, he's got his fist up in the air, the American flag in the background, you know, very iconic shot. Looked like the second coming of that Iwo Jima posed photograph. So you had that. He's coming off the high of that. Then you have Harris come in. But the third part of this that we're not talking about is J.D. Vance, who was selected by Trump to be his running mate it was announced right before the Republican National Convention. Now, Vance himself seems to me to be a little bit of a surprising pick, because however you feel about his policies, it seems to me like it doesn't fit the typical political strategy of selecting a vice president that'll bring in either parts of the vote that the presidential candidate can't reel in, or to be geographically from a state that's a key state in terms of delivering the electoral vote to the presidential candidate. Vance has had some really questionable things attributed to him, something about childless cat ladies and, you know, giving more of a tax credit to people with children as opposed to people who don't have children. This is starting again. For the conservatives, they're cheering this on. But I have to wonder how many independents is this winning over? How many women voters who appear to be poised to be a crucial voting block this election cycle? So, Derek, how do you feel about J.D. Vance? Do you feel he's a net positive or a net negative for the Trump campaign? Or is it just a neutral thing? It doesn't really matter who the VP pick is.
I find him to be a neutral. I think there's some people that, you know, he's going to galvanize. And I think there's some people that he's going to lose. But I think ultimately at the end of the day, you know, I heard someone say that if Trump wasn't required to pick a running mate, he would not. So I don't think that he puts a lot of weight into who that is. I thought it was a little more strategic with Pence to get that huge voting block of evangelicals like locked in. So I thought that one was more strategic, I guess, and the angle that I've heard, and I've heard of J.D. Vance for a while. I have not dove into him like headfirst to figure out all of his policies and everything like that, but it seems like his main constituency is he has a reputation as like being a Rust Belt guy, but I feel like they kind of already have that. So I agree. I don't see an obvious win here for them. And I agree. It does kind of fly in the face of a lot of the other VP picks who are, you know, like you, I mean, you, exactly what you said, they're either going to win they're going to help you win a swing state that's important, or they appeal to some group that you're trying to boost. And I don't see that with them. It does seem a little bit puzzling. One of the names I heard thrown out there that someone thought was like Glenn Youngkin, because that would be in an important state that would probably lock in. But yeah, and it's always hard to know. I mean, I heard 30 names floated in the last 4 months or whatever. So yeah. This was one of the names, but there were so many. I'm like, listen, I'll just know when they announce it, because I'm not gonna keep track.
Right. David, what do you think of J.D. Vance?
J.D. Vance has a fascinating story. He grew up in Appalachia. Not from a poor family, but from a family where the mother was a drug addict, and he was basically raised by his grandmother, and he was a self-made man. You know, he went into the Marines and got himself straightened out. He went into Harvard and became an attorney. He wrote a best-selling book. Having said that, I think
let me correct you a little bit on that. Was it Harvard or Yale? I don't want my niece getting upset at me. I think it was Yale, wasn't it?
All right, I'll tell you. You know, it's one of those. He's an
Ivy League school. Yes, prestigious school.
Ivy League school. And he is. Probably, I heard somebody say that for his age, he is one of the most accomplished people in the United States. You know, became a United States senator. But I think he has a lot of problems that might be attributed to his youth and to him, his thinking that he's, you know, like Trump, he thinks he's the smartest man in any room that he walks into. And he is also the most concentrated quintessence of ambition I have ever seen in my life. I have never seen anybody who, even Ted Cruz, isn't able to get down on his knees and smooch the way this guy can. I mean, 4 years ago, he said that Trump was basically an American Hitler, and now he says he's, you know, the savior of the United States. You know, his policy about encouraging people to have families is actually a smart policy. The United States is facing a situation where we will become like China, and our population will start into a negative growth cycle. So it's not a stupid idea to encourage people to have families. But it's really stupid to call anybody who doesn't have kids a lonely cat woman. You know, it's just kind of like, once again, it's not designed to attract anyone into your camp other than people who are already in your camp.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just me, but I tend to think there's something unlikable about him personally. Like, and I don't know what it is exactly. I mean, policy-wise, as a libertarian, I can find plenty to not like about J.D. Vance as I do about Trump. There might be one or two things I can find interesting. Yeah. Like, he seems to be anti-interventionist. So, you know, yeah, to the extent that he doesn't support, like Trump, getting us into new wars. Fair enough. I can get along with that. But again, while I may agree with you that it might be smart for people to have families, I hate for that to become some sort of government policy or government encouragement.
How about just changing the tax system so they're not punished for having kids? Which is
You won't work too hard to convince both Derek and myself that all taxation is theft, right? So, yeah. So the way I view it is, any tax cut is theft avoidance. So that's fine. Like, for any tax cut. However, I tend to try to be egalitarian about my tax cuts, in the sense that make them blind tax cuts. Like, all taxes are theft. Let's cut everything down to the bare minimum. I'm not an anarchist, so I agree there has to be a state. But when you say things like homeowners can deduct their mortgage, but renters can't deduct their rent, right? That's the government showing a preference for one class of citizens over another. When you say we'll give preferential treatment to parents as opposed to single folks, that is preferential treatment. It's the government pushing you in desired direction towards a desired behavior. So to that extent, I find that objectionable, not the tax cut. I'll take any tax cut whenever it comes, you know. So you want to not tax tips? I'm for that. But let's not tax income at all, is my position, right? So to that extent, I'll agree with him. Let's give out those tax cuts. But I wouldn't necessarily limit it to just parents. And to your point, why would I piss off a critical voting bloc by referring to childless women as pathetic cat ladies, or whatever the exact phrase was? And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't he against IVF, in vitro fertilization, or is there some perception that he is?
That I can't say. I do want to address something, though, where you had said that it was alleged that he'd said that. You can find on YouTube him talking to Tucker Carlson. And, right. You know, when he was running for the United States Senate 2 years ago. And so, you know, it's no doubt that he said it and he repeated it. And
So what would you say? This question goes for both you gentlemen. What do you think, aside from, or is it just blind ambition, where 4 years ago, Trump is Hitler, now he's the greatest thing since sliced bread?
Blind ambition.
Yeah, does that play well? I can't see how that plays well with anybody other than MAGA, right?
Well, I'm not even sure it's playing well with them. I mean, I've been reading kind of closely between the lines, and it does seem like everybody except for Trump's two sons and Tucker Carlson, who were pushing him on this. You know, a lot of people are having buyer's remorse.
Really? Okay, so it's getting to be that bad. All right, so let me ask you, both of you, you can take turns. Derek first. So in today's world, does the VP matter? So even if Kamala Harris, I think everyone suspects she'll get Shapiro, the governor from Pennsylvania, to be her running mate. Do VPs matter at all?
I don't really think so. I think you could use it, you know, like we were talking about earlier, to win a swing state or something. But that's, to me, the best case scenario. I think it matters for a short period, and then the focus goes back to, you know, the person at the top of the ticket.
Well, when you're choosing a vice president, the first principle should be do no harm. Mm-hmm. And then if you can, avoid that, then, you know, like I think that you had mentioned Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, and she's going to be having a, that is Kamala is going to be having a rally in Philadelphia, I believe, next Tuesday. And the talk is that she's going to announce him, and in the sense that he's an extremely popular governor, he might actually signal that perhaps Kamala is not anti-Israel like the Biden administration has been the last 6 months, because Shapiro is Jewish and he's a practicing Jew. And Pennsylvania is a must-win state for her. So, you know, these are all things that are not designed to, you know, harm anything. And the fact that he's so popular in Pennsylvania, which is considered a blue state by a lot of people, shows that he's able to get along with both sides. So I don't see how that could possibly hurt her. And as to the question of how important is it who you pick for vice president, statistically speaking, almost half of the people who have been picked as vice president have at some point become president. You know, not necessarily because their president died, but because they were, you know, held up and, you know, ran again. And when that president was retired.
Yeah.
And, so that it is an important decision.
And I was going to say, particularly now, ironically enough, in the case of Trump, being the oldest man to run for president, all of a sudden the selection of J.D. Vance, at least in my opinion, becomes important, because statistically the odds decrease that Trump will make it through 4 years just based on average life expectancy. So and Vance, from what I can tell, has cost him percentage points. A lot of his decline has been attributed to Vance's selection. Now, whether that's accurate or not, whether you believe polls that measure those types of things, just take it with a grain of salt. But it does seem that Vance has cost Trump. And I'm wondering if it was just a matter of Trump wanted a loyalist in a VP because of the perceived betrayal by Trump of Mike Pence during the January 6th riots, where Pence refused to.
Well, there's another factor at work here, and that is he made the selection a few days before it became obvious that Biden was on his way out. So he was. This was basically a hubris-driven selection, because he thought, I've got the whole ball game here. I might as well pick a guy who just loves me and is going to be, you know, carrying on my mantle and instead of worrying about whether the guy might help him or hurt him.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
I do think his age was a benefit for him too, the perceived youth. I think helps kind of what David was saying with them being a long-term player. I think that was a little bit of a factor.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that. But again, is it working out? Because again, there's people pointing to his decline being attributed to the selection of Vance. So we'll see. And again, women aren't lining up behind J.D. Vance right now. Those independent women, the ones who were going to be a tough sell for Republicans based on the pro-life lobby and sending abortion back to the states, and Vance wanting to criminalize women who leave one state, go across state lines to have an abortion. I think he said he's against that and will look to criminalize that. So it's interesting that it's not coming off well, in my opinion, that selection of Vance as of right now. Okay.
Can I throw two names at you?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Look up sometime when you're got nothing else better to do. Look up George McGovern and Thomas Eagleton. And do you know why I'm suggesting that you look them up? Because Thomas Eagleton was George McGovern's first vice presidential pick, and then 2 weeks later he dumped him because they found out that he'd been seeing a psychiatrist. So I don't think we can put past Trump the idea that he may figure out on some way to dump J.D. Vance off the ticket.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprising. It certainly wouldn't be. It'd be turnaround as fair play to some extent after Biden dropped out. So it'd be interesting to see how this plays out. It's going to be an interesting stretch run. Speaking of interesting stretch runs, and let me remind everybody, you're watching Free for All right here at Grumblings Media. If you have any questions for our guests or myself, please feel free. Jump in the comment section on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, or X, and let us know what your questions are. Okay, moving on. We have someone who is poised to be a spoiler, at least in my opinion, potentially third-party spoilers. Now, the big name, of course, is going to be RFK, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Now, what's interesting is prior to Harris coming on, Kennedy was polling near double digits. As of the most recent poll that we showed earlier, he's polling at 5.6%. Fewer and fewer people indicating that they're going to vote for RFK Jr. What do you guys think? Is this because people are catching on to RFK and they're figuring out he's like basically a vaccine grifter and he's just out there a one or two issue kind of guy? Is he this year's Bernie Sanders in the sense that he may have, he's got a lot of socialists behind him. He's got a few hardcore libertarians whose only issue seems to be the COVID vaccines. Like, what do we make of RFK being poised to be a major player in this, like a Ross Perot level player when Biden was still in the race? Now that Biden drops out, Harris is in, all of a sudden that support for RFK seems to be waning a bit. David, what do you make of that?
Well, I thought he had passed his sell-by date before Biden they grabbed him with the hook. He was exciting when he first, when he had some like ads on at the Super Bowl and things like that. And, you know, people are always excited about a Kennedy. And but I think that, you know, he may be the most conspiracy theory oriented candidate I've ever seen run that anybody was looking at seriously.
More than Lyndon LaRouche, David?
Well, I think that they are looking at Kennedy a lot more seriously than they were looking at Lyndon LaRouche.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
but I, of course, Trump, he loves him, his conspiracy theories. And, I think that, the more you listen to Kennedy, the more you basically say, well, the guy's a crank. And, as much as I like what he says about freedom of speech and how, people should be allowed to say what they want to say and all that kind of stuff, he, all of his other baggage just kind of tends to weigh him down, in my opinion. Yeah. And I think that had already started to happen before Biden was kicked off.
Hey, Derek, so you had mentioned before the show started, you kind of came into the Libertarian Party basically due to the oppressive situation you saw during COVID, during the pandemic. As a Libertarian who rode in on a Mises wave, how do you feel about RFK? For example, were you happy that he was invited to speak at the Libertarian National Convention, which went against, years of tradition of not inviting your rivals, him and Trump? How do you view from where you're sitting, how do you view a candidate like RFK?
Well, I think he's an important voice on a lot of topics. He's really good on Ukraine. I've heard a lot of them just simply because I want to hear people that are interesting. I can listen to someone I don't agree with, and that's fine. Like, I think that we're in a situation where too many people are just like, that person's bad. I can't hear them. Like, I can hear the worst thing ever and disagree with it. And, like, I think that's something that has gone away recently. I don't know when it's, I don't really fully understand why, because when you talk to most people in person, they're pretty reasonable most of the time. But he has a couple, he's a couple topics he's really good on, his Israel. I mean, for me, my bit anti-war is one of my primary things. I think he's definitely a big statist. Like he's for sure a statist, which I don't like. But you know, it's now that COVID's done or whatever, you know, now all our money is going to Ukraine and Israel. And so now those are like the new things. And like, he lost me with his full throated Israel support, which makes me kind of like, to, you know, use the word conspiratorial, like, well, what's going on with that? Like, cause you're so against the other wars and you talk about how, you know, like we shouldn't be seen around the globe as guys with guns and we should be helping people. But then now all of a sudden you're using the same rhetoric as a neocon about how Israel's a, an aircraft carrier in the Middle East. Like, that's what I hear neocons saying. And that's just the opposite of what you're saying about Ukraine. So that's kind of how I feel about him, being invited to the LP convention. Like I said, this was my first time ever watching it. I'm new to the party, or newer to the party. Sure. I don't see anything wrong with it. If anything, it's like, let's, you know, hear what he has to say. Like, he's not going to get the nomination. Like, that was never in play. That was never going to happen. And I didn't see anything wrong with it personally, but, you know, he's an interesting guy. And also, like, for a long time, the only two candidates that were even in the mix, everyone hated. And so it's like, it's good to at least insert another person in there. And I'll, even though for this presidential run, technically this hurts the Libertarian Party because there's another viable third party or third candidate, I guess you could say, you know, like some of his ideas I think are important to be heard. And I think it's also, like I was saying earlier, I think it's good to be able to hear things that you don't agree with necessarily all the time. And I think that's healthy way we process information.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think anyone, at least I wouldn't view his run as being problematic per se, because I do think, and what is problematic, though, at least if you're a libertarian, and I'll use that to transition into the next guy we want to talk about as well, Chase Oliver, who is the Libertarian Party's candidate for president, is that now that the race is a statistical dead heat with between Harris and Trump, it becomes more and more likely that in several swing states, there's a good chance that spoilers will come from RFK or the Libertarian Party, Chase Oliver. In 2020, the ticket of Joe Jorgensen and Spike Owen for the Libertarian Party cost Trump the election. I don't think there's any doubt about that, which is why Trump was so interested in going to the Libertarian National Convention and trying to convince libertarians to vote for him, to become Trump supporters. I think it was four swing states where the margin of difference between Biden and Trump, the so-called spread, was beaten by Joe Jorgensen. Joe Jorgensen had more votes for her than the difference between Biden and Trump in at least four swing states. So I think this year around, part of the Republican strategy was, let's see if we could siphon off those libertarian voters, because I don't know why, but for some reason, Republicans tend to think that were it not for the Libertarian Party, all libertarians would be Republicans for some reason. That seems to be a prevalent thought process. So what do we think of Chase Oliver? Now, the presence of Kennedy is definitely cutting into the Libertarian Party's ability to get votes. Like with Gary Johnson, they got a little bit over 3%. With Joe Jorgensen, it was just under 2%. I've heard a lot of people say they doubt if Chase and Mike Tremont are going to be able to get 1% of the vote. Derek, what do you think in terms of Chase Oliver? I mean, he's a hardworking candidate. He's campaigning in all 50 states. Him and Mike are traveling all over the country. They're trying to get the vote out, register libertarians for down ballot candidates. What do you think of Chase and Mike? And also, at 2-for-1 question for you, Derek. What do you make of some state affiliates refusing or threatening to not put Chase on their ballot, on their state ballot?
Well, Chase is, he's a candidate that, he wasn't at the California convention, so I didn't get a chance to really hear him. And I didn't know a ton about him, really, just due to, he wasn't there. Like, that's where I heard all the other guys, for the most part, in person, and I was able to hear kind of what they said. And because he wasn't there, I kind of didn't think that, I don't know. I didn't see how he was going to beat some of the other candidates. So I didn't, there's only so many hours in my day. I can't learn about everything. But I've looked into some of his stuff, and I actually watched a Zero Hedge debate that he was one of the panelists on about a month or so ago. Cause I'm like, all right, I should just check this out. But it was a one topic debate. It was about border policy. So it didn't get into really anything else, but he seems well-spoken. He carries himself well. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but I do think that what happened on some of the state levels is just unconscionable. Like, even though I might not agree with him and he might not have been my candidate pick, that's unacceptable at the state level to do that, in my opinion. So I was not a fan of that. I looked into that a little bit, and I just don't think that I don't agree with that at all. Even if I don't agree with him on some things, I definitely don't agree with that happening to him. So that shouldn't happen.
Okay.
I would second that. I don't think that, the Libertarian Party has been around forever. There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to be on every state ballot. And I've looked into his candidacy. Got a lot of stuff that I don't agree with him about, but I'm a double hater, and I'm a neither Trump nor Harris, so I might end up voting for him. I'm also starting to tell people that not voting is a form of voting.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I tend to agree with you, David. I tell people my particular journey, both in libertarianism and electoral politics in general, is about 25, 30 years ago, I just had the epiphany that voting for the lesser of two evils is still evil. You still end up worse than where you were at that moment. You'll end up in a worse spot. So I agree with you. If you don't like any of the candidates, stay home or write your own name in. If they let you write your own name in, write your own, even if it doesn't count, write your own name in or stay home. But I will say this. I am a Chase Oliver fan for the most part, basically because I think he takes what I believe to be the libertarian position on most issues. I also think he's a tireless worker. I don't think anyone can question his work ethic when it comes to campaigning and working for the party. He did force the Senate runoff in Georgia, which cost the Republicans the Senate, basically by causing a runoff between Warner and Herschel Walker, and Herschel Walker lost, and that cost the Republicans the majority, basically. So he knows how to campaign, and I think he has some, not great, I think more than Joe Jorgensen in terms of name recognition. But yeah, it's going to be a tough road to hoe because I think of RFK. I think if RFK were not running in this race, Chase would be getting above that 3% mark. But I think because of RFK's participation, I don't think he'll garner the 3%. But David, how do we feel in terms of spoilers that in swing states? Now, what's interesting here is the LP chair, Angela McArdle. I think everyone knows Chase is not her man, and she is an RFK or Trump supporter in terms of who she views as being beneficial for the LP. So given that, and the fact that the party seems to be exhorting its members to vote for Chase in blue states and then vote your conscience in red states, that seems to be the Libertarian Party chair's position.
That doesn't sound like a unified position to me.
It's not. And there's a lot of infighting over that, which I think we could dedicate several shows to. But that seems to be the messaging going on right now. But having said that, between RFK and Chase Oliver, at least it seems like, they'll be siphoning, do you think, more from the Harris vote or more from the Trump vote? Which vote do you think the combined effort of, or the combined presence, I should say, of RFK, Chase Oliver, if you want to throw Jill Stein and Cornel West in there, who I'm assuming take the lefty vote, how do we see, do we feel that this might be a path for Trump to win? Because these two third party candidates are going to be drawing too much from the left?
It kind of depends on how successfully Trump is able to paint Kamala Harris with her actual true colors, which is that she's an extreme woke lefty who's trying to, she's trying to convince everybody that she's not. And so if he is able to convince people of that, and if the media is able to not draw cover for her, like an example being when they were saying, well, I know it's not true that Kamala Harris was appointed the border czar, when, you know, everybody knows that she was, so I mean, it's kind of like there was a I saw a movie years ago where a woman discovers her husband in bed with another woman, and she says, "Who is this person?" And he says, "What person?" There, and he gets up and he gets dressed, and he says, "Well, there's nobody there. You know, there. I don't know what it is you think you're seeing, but you're not seeing it." And that is what they are doing with, since they realize that Kamala Harris doesn't appeal, her politics do not appeal to the middle.
Right.
They're going to try and convince everybody that she's not an extreme left winger.
So to that end, you don't feel that Kennedy and Oliver are going to siphon from Harris?
It'll all depend on how successful it is of Trump painting her in her true colors. And if the country views her as liberal, then I think they will probably siphon off some of her support.
Okay, fair enough. Derek, what do you think?
Well, I've heard a lot of pontificating on this topic for the past few months. And, the opinion that I've heard the most frequently at this point is that people seem to think RFK specifically is going to probably siphon more off from Trump at this point, is just what I hear mostly. I don't have a real strong opinion. I think David makes a good point there, one that I haven't heard or really thought about. So that's interesting. I got to think on that for a little bit. But I think between the combined Oliver and Kennedy, I would think probably a little bit more from Trump, if I had to guess.
Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, he certainly bombed when he went to visit the Libertarian Convention. I mean, it was like, it was like a Baptist preacher going to a convention of cat houses or something. I mean, not.
Yeah, he bombed with everybody except the LP leadership, basically. Everybody else he bombed with, but they still loved him in the leadership. Same thing with RFK, obviously, because of the shenanigans going on there with the joint fundraising. But What's interesting is traditionally, and I've always heard this, I've seen some data to back this up, the Libertarians seem to, generally speaking, the Libertarian Party seems to draw equally from both Democrats and Republicans. It's always historically been about a 50-50 draw. I know each of the major parties tries to paint the LP as drawing more from itself than from the other party, right? They always say, like, hey, Libertarians, you know, it's a wasted vote, so come vote for me. We're basically the same anyway. And you have both Democrats and Republicans claiming that. But traditionally, it's been about 50-50. You have libertarian, so-called, and I hate this term because I don't think it's accurate, but you have the left Libertarians, which people are trying to pin on Chase. And you also have the right Libertarians who, like, say, Vivek Ramaswamy and whatever this mythical libertarian nationalism is. I don't understand that. So it'll be interesting to me to see how the third party candidates as a group. I'd love to see the post-election results to see who they drew from the most, because both you guys seem to think it might be slightly more from Trump, but I'm wondering if it's going to come from Harris. You know, the other thing is, who does the opposite team have a stronger passion for dislike? You know, like, is it the Trump voters who passionately hate the wokeness represented by Harris, or is it the Harris voters who still view Trump as the existential threat to democracy, quote unquote? So it'll be interesting to me to see where those middle guys end up, the independent voters, and if they go third party, who was their fallback choice? Quick question to sort of wrap up the show. Are you guys in favor of ranked choice voting so we don't have to guess about this stuff in future elections? Let's start with David on that one.
I've read a lot about it, and I'm not a fan. I like the old traditional first past the post, because I think it's a cleaner way of, if you want to create a democracy like they have in Europe or something, then you would have proportional representation where every lunatic idea would have its own party.
Party, yeah. And,
yeah.
Derek, what do you think? Choice voting, like MVP voting in baseball? What do we do? Okay, there you go. Delegate, yes.
Ranked choice voting, right on there.
Okay.
So yeah, I like it. Well, I heard a good point about it within the last week, and it was kind of referring to like the British parliamentary system, which I don't know a ton about, because, I mean, other countries' political methodologies, I mean, that's ours is very hard to figure out, let alone figuring out someone else's. But essentially, how it was explained, and I'm not claiming to know every little detail, but you can have a small party that kind of comes out of nowhere, and if you have ranked choice voting, or you have a way for them to kind of get to like 4%, and then they do a little bit, then they get to that's like the only way to not be mired in a two-party duopoly essentially forever. So I guess I'm in favor of it, just simply because another reason, I mean, beyond COVID, another reason why, so I've never voted Democrat or Republican. I voted Libertarian even before I was in Libertarian Party or Independent, just because the two-party system to me is like the biggest, I mean, it's one of the biggest issues that our country faces. So I've always been really kind of opposed to it, pretty heavily. And so that's kind of that. I did want to say one thing before. So I come from a professional sports background, and I want to just briefly kind of just assert kind of how I feel about a lot of infighting in the Libertarian Party. Coming from a professional sports background, you can't be working against your teammates and expect to ever win anything of value. And that's what's been really frustrating for me, because I listen to any other person's opinion, and maybe they know something that I don't. And like, I think that the Libertarians that have been in the party for a long time have a lot of value, and they're awesome. I have nothing against them at all. And what I saw at the state convention and the national convention is just a team pulling in two. It's like playing tug of war, and like nothing's ever going to come of that. So I'd like to see us kind of, you know, row together and start, because for the most part, I think we all agree on 90% of the things and more, and we definitely agree more. Like I've yet to hear any, you know, and I'm not saying there isn't, but none of like the Mises people that I know have ever said that they like Trump. Like I haven't heard that. So I think that's kind of a little bit of a misperception. But you know, I just walked into this wanting to make a positive impact, and that's very difficult if we can't figure out how to put our differences aside and work together.
Right. Right. Well, you know, Derek, you know what they say about 100 libertarians in the room, right?
Yeah.
99 of them ain't libertarians, right? Because no matter who you ask, everybody else in the room is not a real libertarian, right?
The purity test.
Yeah, all the purity tests. You're absolutely right. All right. Well, that seems like a great point to end this on. I want to thank both my guests for tonight's episode. Let's start with Derek Fabian. He's the San Diego Libertarian Party chair. Derek, please, if you have anything you want to plug or give people some information, go ahead.
I'm really not much on social media at this point. And I'm just kind of getting going, on the website or on the, you know, as the chair. And so I'm just kind of formulating what direction, you know, I'd like to work with these guys. I'd like to definitely thank, you know, my ex-com. Those guys are awesome. And if you're in the San Diego County and you're watching this and you're a libertarian at all, or are interested, you know, usually we have a debate night. I live in Mission Beach, so we have it at my place on the beach, and usually we get pizza and, you know, about just the fundamentals of debate. And if you know, we would love to have good libertarians in the county, you know, join. It's $25 and come check it out and help us out. I know, we could, you know, could use all the quality people that we can.
Excellent. Everyone, you heard. Free pizza and a lot of jabbering on the beach with Derek, just for the low, low price of $25. But in all seriousness, check out the San Diego Libertarian Party if you're in that area, sdlp.org. Derek, thank you for joining the show. Really appreciate it. Also now, David, thank you for joining the show. And anything you'd like to plug?
Read your local newspaper. That's what, and in particular, read our local newspaper, which you can find in Escondido at many, many stores, 100 locations. And if you want to read it online at EscondidoTimesAdvocate.net.
All right.
Dot org. Yes.
.org. All right. Excellent. Thank you to my guest for joining me tonight for this conversation. Had a really good time. Would like to invite them back again for a future episode. For everybody else, remember, subscribe to @GrumblingsMedia, regardless of the platform. We're everywhere. YouTube, Facebook, X, Rumble. Anywhere you can find a podcast or a show, you'll find Grumblings Media. Smash that subscribe button if you can help us out. I'd really appreciate it. Okay, until next time, this has been Big John for Free For All. Peace out, everyone.